This is Stephen Adams.
And this is Kevin Durant. Oh, sorry.
Kevin Durant.
You're Kevin Durant, mate.
Good to see you, mate. Different complexion.
Okay, let's go again.
So, this is Stephen Adams.
And this is Enes Kanter.
You're listening to the Down to Earth...
Down to Dunk podcast.
What? Down to Dunk.
Down to Dunk.
I'll say that.
Dunk.
Introduce yourself, mate.
Here's Stephen Adams, and I'm Enes Kanter.
And you're listening to Down to Dunk podcast.
Stay tuned.
Welcome to Down to Dunk. This is your host, Andrew Schlecht. We are a part of DailyThunder.com and Almighty Baller Radio. You can listen to us on Dash Radio on Saturday afternoons. With me today, special guest, Fred Katz of the Norman Transcript. Fred, what is up?
The same as always. Just, sitting here, just can't believe how entertaining these NBA playoffs have been.
Oh, it's captivating. I have to watch every second I can. My wife just is yelling at me every night to stop watching this fun basketball. And
you know what's even more fun? When you make a personal vow to yourself, like you do every year, that you're going to watch every game. And like, even if you miss it, like say you go out for drinks with a coworker on a Wednesday, hypothetically, and then you come back and you're just sitting down watching, the Celtics-Washington game 5 on your Tebow. Already having known that the Celtics won by 25 and they were up 20 in the first half, it's just a blast to watch that stuff when you already know that nothing changes and it's going to be horrible the whole way through.
It's so brutal. And we expect kind of teams to just get destroyed by the Cavs and Warriors. But there's just been, how many good games have there been? Maybe 4? I mean, there haven't been any really great games from night to night. Last playoffs was so much fun. Even the Mavs and Thunder in the first round was more fun than some of these series. And it's frustrating. And I wish that we could have some fun before the inevitable Warriors championship.
Yeah, it's disappointing. It's I want to call the NBA and be like, you know what? I was fine with Warriors Cavs Part 3, but you told me this was going to be fun along the way. You told me this was going to be fun. It's not anyone's fault. This is just random and fluky. The NBA playoffs are usually pretty good, but this is just random and fluky. But it's just even the close series, it's the home team just blows out the road team. It's just the way it is. Boston and Washington, the home team blows out the road team, and Houston and San Antonio, the home team blows out the road team. It's just what's happening.
Except for the only thing that I've loved in this playoffs is Manu. The Manu game was probably my favorite thing.
That was awesome. I loved Kevin Durant cursing at the mascot. I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah. I have a hard time talking about that particular person, but the Manu stuff I loved.
I thought that was so funny. The Manu stuff was... He was awesome. That block on Harden was... Okay, can we talk a little about how that block on Harden was tremendously lucky?
It was so risky. Oh, my goodness.
It was so risky. It was so mad. It was a great play because he made it, and it was a tremendous play. It was also so lucky. You could clean block... How many times have you seen James Harden get clean blocked, and it's just called a foul because he's James Harden?
Oh, yeah. And
just because he sells it really well.
Sure. And I think some of it is that the officials are kind of getting sick of his crap, I think, over the course of the playoffs, where they, because it looks bad on them, because they'll show the replays and it's clearly not a foul. And he's just tricking the officials into some fouls. And it's not a good look for the league, not a good look for the officials. So I wonder if part of it is that, you know what, it's got to be an obvious foul if it's on Harden. I wonder if that plays into it.
Yeah, officials are human. Breaking. Officials are human.
Breaking news. Maybe not forever, but at least for now, officials are human. Yeah. Don't you think... I've heard this argument recently. Don't you think they need a fourth official on the floor where these guys don't have to run up and down the court so much and they could maybe just have more eyes to be able to see these plays?
Yeah, well, that's something that the league is considering. Mm-hmm. They are considering a fourth official. There are a couple of things. There are some coaches who have been pretty vocal privately. Obviously, it's not something to talk about publicly because the NBA just doesn't really appreciate criticism of officials coming from coaches and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And this isn't really a criticism of an official as much as it is kind of a way they want to overhaul it. But one of the things that, like, I think Rick Carlisle is someone who's been internally someone pushing for that. You're talking to the ref guy, by the way, the guy who knows all the refs and the inner workings of the league with the ref. So good question for me.
Yes.
But I think Rick Carlisle is the coach who's been pushing the hardest for that.
Mm-hmm.
The issues that the league would have to work out is one thing that the league genuinely wonders, and I think it is a good question, is, okay, so you think that the officials now are not good enough. If you bring in four officials, then you are lowering the median caliber of the league because you have to hire more officials.
Mm-hmm.
And thus the bottom 10% of officials are going to be worse than what the bottom 10% of officials are now. Mm-hmm. They have to figure out pay and that kind of stuff too, because they basically it would be expansion from the officials' side. So they have to figure out pay, and they basically have to redesign the way that officials communicate and work with each other, because they've been working with 3-man teams forever. And so the way they position themselves and the way they find stuff, like, they basically have to redesign the fundamentals of officiating. And that's something that they worry about doing too, because they figure, you know, Tony Brothers has been doing this with two other people for, you know, 2 or 3 decades or whatever mm-hmm. it's been, at least. And he's going to have, you know, that first season where he's going to be reverting to his old habits, and he's going to slide to the wrong spot of the floor, and there are going to be a lot of blown calls. And is that 1 or 2 year adjustment period worth it? And so it's a little more complicated than just, you know, you get, you know, eight eyes as opposed to 6 eyes on the floor. That being said, I mean, I totally understand it and I get why it's a thing, but there are reasonable arguments for why, not necessarily against it, but at least why there should be skeptical. And I think the league has talked about trying that out in the D League and that kind of stuff too. So I imagine they'll test it at Summer League at some point soon, and they'll see how they like it.
Yeah. And you think that eventually, I mean, all things kind of get off to a rough start, but eventually you think you can see why it would be a good idea.
Sure. Sure. I mean, you're also crowding the court a little bit too. Like, you're giving the players less room.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a thing too.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think overall it would probably work, is my guess. You give each official a little bit less responsibility,
mm-hmm.
and it would probably eventually work. But I bet you that first year or two or three, people would be like, "This isn't working. This is going terribly."
Mm-hmm.
I bet you it would be part of the narrative.
At least it won't be like the year that they tried the different style of ball. I think it won't be as big a failure as that.
It was too slippery.
Yes. that was so weird. That was such a weird thing.
Yeah, well, you know, that ball wasn't Russell Westbrook's friend.
Oh, no.
That was not one of Russell Westbrook's friends. This is his friend. That was Russell Westbrook's worst enemy.
Oh, man. I had no intention of going off there or even getting to the experimental ball. But we did. And I wanted to talk about team building with you, because the Thunder are at a crossroads right now. They're in a place where they could very well sign Russ to his 5-year max extension. They could continue with Russ. And if Russ wants to stay for his career, they could try to continue to build around him, kind of like the Mavs have with Dirk, or any franchise has with a single superstar, and try to get another superstar if they can, but that would be extremely difficult. But the Thunder at a crossroads, and I talked with John Hamm a little bit about this on Wednesday. What do you think is the best path to a championship for the Thunder? Because a lot of the conversations stem around, like, championship or bust, which I don't think is the way that every franchise thinks, or most franchises think. But what do you think is the best path to a championship for OKC?
Something that you should always choose is Chicken Express. This month at Chicken Express, you can get 15 tenders, 8 bone-in, and 10 biscuits or rolls for $20. Think about that. That's a party for $20. Invite some people over. Go grab some Chicken Express. Their bone-in is really good, as always. Their tenders are great. Their biscuits and rolls are really good. You cannot go wrong with any of their sides. Fried okra, French fries, mac and cheese, all good. Go check out Chicken Express today. There are locations around the metro. There are locations all around Dallas. Please go check out Chicken Express today. You will not regret it. And check out that special, because I'm telling you, you can feed a ton of people, and everyone will leave happy.
The best path path to a championship. I mean, keeping Russell Westbrook around, I think, is certainly there. I think there seems to be this, like, growing, it's still small, but slightly growing minority that says you should trade Russell Westbrook and get a bunch of pieces and, mm-hmm. you know, fall the way down in the draft. And that's your best way of getting two superstars because you're just not going to be able to draft another superstar. You're not going to sign a superstar, and you're more than likely not going to be able to draft another superstar if Russell Westbrook is propping you up into the, you know, at least the teens on a draft pick and more likely the 20s, like they're 21 this year. But I'm a big believer that when you've got one superstar, it's a lot easier to get two than if you have zero. So I think the first sign of that is just re-signing Russell Westbrook this summer. And they have to get their cap situation straightened out. I don't know for certain what they're going to do in terms of paying the luxury tax this summer, but they're pretty close to it. They have to get themselves in a position to not just where they're either avoiding or going over the luxury tax, but they have to get themselves in a position to where they're set up financially in 2018, 19, and so forth, where they can actually have some sort of financial stability and consistency so that they can have consistency on the roster too.
Mm-hmm. They're in a tough, really tough spot because I think that they were just fully prepared to pay as much tax as possible and keep Kevin Durant and keep this championship contender going for the next several years and pay whatever it costs because they had saved a lot of money up until that point. But now they're in this a weird place where they've got all these guys that need to be re-upped, including a guy like Jeremy Grant, who could be re-upped as soon as the summer, like you've talked about on your show. They're in just a strange position because they're not good enough to contend. But they're not bad enough to where they could drop out. So they've got a lot of decisions to make. And I kind of wanted to go through the roster.
I kind of think a lot of improvement could just be internal, though.
It kind of has to be, right?
Right. I mean, like, that's something that, like, Presti kind of talked about continuity at his season-ending press conference. And mm-hmm. a lot of people had this reaction, like, wait, what? You're not going to make major changes? And I think that's because a lot of those people didn't realize the Thunder were over the cap for next year.
Right.
So, like, what are the major changes? Like, I do think they plan on using their mid-level exception and trying to bring in a backup point guard and probably trying to bring in a couple more shooters. But, like, there are people who criticize, why doesn't Sam Presti make more trades? Like, Sam Presti is one of the five most aggressive GMs on the trade market in the NBA. Like, right. Not a lot of – trades are not extremely common in the NBA.
No.
Sam Presti is one of the most trade aggressive GMs in the league. If that's your criticism, you're not paying attention to the rest of the league nearly as much as you should to be able to, you know, make that criticism seem legitimate. So I don't necessarily buy that stuff. I think a lot of this comes internally. Like, look, they shouldn't have been last in the NBA in 3-point percentage. Like, they were, it's not like they're overloaded with shooters or anything, but, like, they had Doug McDermott and decided not to play him. They had Alex Abrines and decided not to play him. They had Andre Roberson and let him put up almost 3 3-point attempts a game. Mm-hmm. Like, if Roberson if they use Roberson the same way Memphis uses Tony Allen, if they play McDermott consistently, they play Alex Abrines consistently. Like, this team is not a great 3-point shooting team by any means, but it's not dead last in the NBA. Like, there are certain ways for them to improve internally, even beyond just kind of, you know, fill in the blank is only in his early 20s, so he's going to get better. Like, there are other ways for them to maximize personnel better.
Yeah, definitely. And they could even, I want to see Jeremy Grant shoot more because he shot really well, but on a low amount of threes. I just want to see if it's real. Like, I want him to be able to get enough threes to see if it's real.
Do you know what percentage of Jeremy Grant's 3-point shots this year were open looks?
Like 99.9%.
I know you're joking, but you're actually not that far off because the answer is 94%.
Yeah. I mean, and that's with a lot of these guys. I mean, Sabonis is probably pretty close as well because they had all day to shoot that ball with the way that Russ ran the offense. And it makes you wonder what they could do with, like, real shooters there.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it does. And I think that's something that they're going to do. Like, I do think they plan on using using the mid-level, and they've got the biannual as well, and they can use, I don't think they're going to use both because they don't seem like I don't think they're going to use both fully because they, I don't think Presti is the type of guy that's going to hard cap the team or anything like that. I don't think that's his, I don't think that's going to be a goal of his at all. And then he's all of a sudden trying to unload assets to get under an, you know, the apron or something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's his style, but they could use portions of either. And I think that's a real possibility. Like they are going to try to bring in a backup point guard. Like that's something that they're going to do. And automatically there's your upgrade. Like that is an upgrade right there. Yes. Like that could bring them to 50. They have below replacement level point guards this year. Oh, like yeah. You get a slightly above average backup point guard, like a slightly above replacement level backup point guard. And right there, that could take them to 50 wins.
Yeah. Who do you have anybody in mind that's a free agent?
I don't know yet. I know people like saying Darren Collison. Mm-hmm. I don't see that. He's off court history with the domestic violence stuff.
Right.
Thunder are constantly, I think it would be. No one has told me specifically, like, no, they wouldn't get Darren Collison. I also haven't asked. But, I mean, I think it would be hypocritical for an organization that preaches on, you know, character all the way, that if they went after someone with that kind of history.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they've cut guys just because of that.
Yeah. And I think that's an admirable trait in the organization. I honestly mm-hmm. think it's one of the better traits in the organization. So I would be surprised if they went after him specifically. But look, like there are a lot of guys out there who they could just sign for the minimum and it would be probably an improvement at that spot.
I know. Obviously Norris Cole is gone. You have predictions. Do you think, I think they probably keep Samaj just because of how cheap he is. And they talk about how much they like him. Yeah.
He loves him.
Yeah.
Billy's not lying when he says that. He loves Samaj. You know how you know he loves Samaje? Because he plays him constantly.
He plays him. Like, and he thinks he can play great defense, yeah.
And it's not like it's if he just felt like Samaje didn't play in those final three playoff games or whatever it was, but if Billy were just kind of pulling our chain and trying to increase Samaje's confidence and just kind of felt like he needed to play a conventional backup point guard throughout the regular season, that's mm-hmm. why he did it. He wouldn't have given him all those off-ball minutes. Like, he was playing him off the ball next to Russell Westbrook in fourth quarters of close games. Like, down the stretch.
I know.
He wouldn't have done that. He wouldn't. I know you know. He wouldn't have done that if he didn't have confidence in Samaje and think that he was a contributing player. So, I think he's going to stick around. And Billy likes to say that he has no influence in personnel. It's not like he's up there, you know, pulling strings and calling teams and making trades, but he's got influence. He's got some amount of influence. If he feels really strongly about something either way, his voice is heard. He's not the final decision maker. Sam Presti loves Billy Donovan.
Mm-hmm.
He really respects him. And if Billy Donovan feels really strongly about something with basketball, they listen because he's a smart guy. And I think he doesn't hold a ton of weight in terms of decision making in the front office or anything like that. And I don't want to give that impression because that's not true. But a lot of people in there respect his opinion a lot. And if you feel strongly about something, they say, okay, maybe we're thinking about this wrong. Let's think about this again. Because that's a thing that's happened before and probably will continue to happen as long as he's there, because there are people there who respect his basketball opinion a lot.
Yeah. So I'm looking at the free agent list. There's guys out there that I think they could get with an exception, like an Ian Clark, I think could be a good backup point guard. Shelvin Mack, like these guys are probably the ones that are in their range. And there's not a ton of guys above that. I feel like there's like these top flight guys and then there's these hit or miss kind of veteran Ramon Sessions type guys. And You just think that the Thunder are always going to err on the side of some guy that can play defense, and that's why I look at a guy like Shelvin Mack and say, like, oh, you know what, he could play backup point and defend decently.
They should just get Chris Paul.
Yeah. Do you think Chris Paul would back up Russ?
Yeah, mid-level exception.
It'll be interesting how they fill that. I also think that they might look to fill it through the draft again because they've shown that they like to draft point guards. And there's a few.
Couldn't you see them just loving Sean Livingston now?
Oh, man. Yeah. Don't you think Sean Livingston's not really a great fit for the second unit for the Thunder?
Yeah, I don't. But couldn't you see them, like, he's like the best. I don't know if you know Sean Livingston's personality at all. He's the best. He's so impressive. You know, he's this great locker room guy. Every single teammate says he's the best teammate. Mm-hmm. He's long. He's rangy. Defends multiple positions. He doesn't shoot threes. Like, isn't he the Sam Presti prototype?
Well, and Sam Presti is the guy that basically restarted his NBA career. So
yeah, Sean Livingston is. I mean, he's a top five backup point guard.
Oh, he's great. He's really good. I guess if you surround him with shooters, that'd be okay.
Right. We'll see. What if the bench unit is Livingston? And Livingston honestly might be too expensive for the mid-level anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But what if it was Livingston surrounded with Abrines, McDermott, Grant, and Sabonis? And Sabonis turns into a 35% three-point shooter.
I mean, that'd help. I mean, that would be – he would fit in great there. I almost kind of really like the way that he's used sometimes as even like a small forward, where he comes in and just helps move the ball. But you have to have shooting around him there, too. He's a really good passer.
He's a really, really good passer.
Yeah, he is.
He's a great passer within an offense. He's not a flashy passer.
Mm-hmm.
Great passer within an offense, though.
And I think that the Thunder would like him, one, because he can run an offense, and two, because you can play him next to Russ because he's got the size and the ability to defend multiple positions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are guys. I mean, there are guys, a lot of guys who could be upgrades. So I've got like the list called up right now, and you've got your. I mean, Deron Williams is not going to come here. The thing is, a lot of these guys aren't necessarily going to come, but they're like Deron Williams wouldn't. But you've got your Sergio Rodriguez's and Shelvin Max and,
mm-hmm.
and Ray Felton's. Ray Felton had a good year this year. And
I think Ray Felton is a massive upgrade, which is a weird sentence to say, but he is.
Oh, I agree with you. Ray Felton had a really good year this year. He was mm-hmm. he was a top 10 backup point guard this year.
Yep.
He was really quality. Like there are guys who are quality backups who you look at and maybe they're not the best backups in the NBA, but they're perfectly stable for mm-hmm. your second unit. And that is fine. That's all you need when you have a top three or four or five point guard in the NBA. Like, that's all you need. Mm-hmm. If you have someone who's going to be stable for the 13 minutes Russ is off the floor, you're fine.
Mm-hmm. I heard you say on one of your shows that you think that the Thunder should get a stretch four, like spend that money, the mid-level money on a stretch four. Do you have anybody in mind with that? I think the Thunder do need a stretch four, and I guess theoretically they could already have him on the roster with Grant or Sabonis. But did you have anybody in mind that could be a free agent?
No, not in particular. I just kind of think that was also kind of in relation to wondering about Enes Kanter's future as well.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't Serge Ibaka be good?
What about Jermichael Green? How much money do you think Jermichael Green will make this?
I think he's getting more than the mid-level.
Yeah.
I think he's more expensive than that. He's good.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good player. I think he's going to end up getting more than that. But I think they could kind of use that four who could shoot on the outside. That's something that could help them. There aren't a ton of guys who shoot the three and are unrestricted guys out there. There aren't a ton of like those guys who are like actually legitimate players, you know?
Super cool bees. Bring in Michael Beasley.
Oh, you bring in the bees. Oh, I'd love to cover him.
I would love for him to be here. It will never, ever happen.
Part of my favorite nickname though, which was Trey Kirby had when he was with Miami. Trey Kirby called him and Chris Anderson the bird and the bees.
Yes, that's right.
Which was great.
I like Trey Kirby a lot. He's
that
great.
Was a great one. Trey Kirby's hilarious.
What about this one?
There aren't a ton of stretch guys out there.
What about
who I think could be mid-level guys?
I don't think this is a solution to any problem. But what about Jeff Green?
That is how so many teams' demise have started.
That's why Orlando sucked this year.
What about Jeff Green? Quoth Orlando, quoth the Clippers, quoth Memphis, quoth Boston. Boston. What about Jeff Green?
Man,
what about him?
I don't know why he's bad. I know he's not helpful.
It depends. It depends on what his market is.
Yeah.
What are you giving him in this scenario?
2 years, $16 million.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. I think Jeff Green has kind of had a reputation to where, like, everyone responds the way that I just responded, but yeah, I mean, look, he got $15 million this year, and that was crazy.
Yes.
And that was a weird way for them to use cap space.
Yes.
And like Doc with the Clippers gave up a first round pick to rent him, and yeah, that was crazy too. That was also crazy.
It's very odd. But in relation to the other wings.
But yeah, no, that would be okay. He can play the three, he can play the four.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually not an awful defender.
I wonder if the perception of him would change if he's only thought of as a backup fourth or fifth wing/four. I wonder if the perception changes. Like if we were to slide him into
the perception rarely changes, but maybe the reality does.
Yeah.
That could work. That could be okay. Look, this is exactly what Jeff Green does though. He listens to this conversation. Yeah, that could work. Then you get desperate in contract negotiations. It's like, yeah, okay, yeah, yeah, sure. We'll bring you in for 2 for $32 million.
Gosh. Yeah, that would be bad. Yeah, I think there's players in the league that are the idea of them is much better than who they really are. And Jeff Green has been that guy for a long time. I think Rudy Gay is one of those guys for a lot of people. They're like, oh,
yeah, definitely.
He's a big wing. He can probably defend guys, and he can score. Have you seen his stats? The guy can score. And it's like, well,
Rudy Gay. Can't believe it took us this long to mention Rudy Gay.
The Thunder were linked to him all season, and it infuriated me up until he tore his Achilles.
Well, he could be cheap. I have no idea what his market's going to be.
You think that he would take like a cheap one-year deal just to rehab and just to see what he can do?
Maybe. I don't know what he's thinking, or I don't know if he's in a position where he wants to limit risk and he wants to sign the longest possible deal.
Yeah.
In which case I wouldn't sign him because he's coming off an Achilles injury, which is about as serious as they come, and that's tough. Like, how many guys have recovered even to 75% level after an Achilles injury? Not that many.
No.
The most recent probably being Wes Matthews.
Mm-hmm.
But Wes Matthews is like really at 75%. Like, he's not as good as he was in Portland.
Right.
And has not lived up to that contract that he signed in Dallas. Even if he is still an above average player, he's just Portland. He was really, really good, and he's not really, really good anymore. He's just not the post-up guy. He's not able to create his own shot. He's not nearly as quick. He's not quite the on-ball defender that he was in Portland. So, yeah, I mean, that's a risk. And Rudy Gay is older. He's older than Wes. Yeah. And I don't know. I don't know if that's – like, Wes Matthews is also, like – his reputation is, like, that dude is, like, the hardest worker ever. Right.
Yeah.
Like, it's not shocking that one of the guys – obviously, a lot of this is out of your hands. It doesn't matter how hard you work. If you're hurt, you're hurt.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing you can do. But it's not necessarily shocking that if somebody were going to come back, it would be Wes Matthews while still in his 20s, being able to work his way back, because everybody talks about how Wes Matthews is just like the hardest worker, most competitive guy ever. And I don't know how many other players are like that, like have that same work ethic and determination to be able to get to that point. It's just really hard to come back from, even in 2017, with all the medicine is today, like it's really hard to come back from an Achilles. If Rudy Gay wants to come to Oklahoma City, sign a one-year minimum deal and says, hey, if I suck, then you can bench me. It's fine. I'd be like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
1 year minimum? Sure.
Yeah. But like, they would have to. I'm
not giving Rudy Gay multiple years coming off an Achilles. That's not something that I would do.
Lincoln Lending understands that not all lenders are created equal. With the most competitive interest rates and highly trained professionals, Lincoln Lending will communicate and accommodate your every need throughout the home buying process. Getting approved has never been easier with Lincoln Lending's new mobile app and website. Download the Lincoln Lending app in the App Store and Google Play Store. Visit our website at www.lincolnok.com or call 799-LEND to apply today. Lincoln Lending. Not all lenders are created equal. NMLS 398026.
Would you do a 1 year, $8 million deal for Rudy Gay?
Depends on what his expectations are.
He expects to be, I don't know. What does Rudy Gay expect anywhere? I have no idea.
Yeah, no, I wasn't expecting you to give me an answer.
Okay.
I just, it depends. The reason I say that is because if his expectations on that 1 for 8 is you're going to give me tons of playing time until I get it so I can boost my stock for next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no way.
Then no, I wouldn't do that because you run a danger of him hijacking the offense. But if the expectations are that he's just going to be a solid bench player and he's happy to take that role and revert into another point in his career, then maybe that's something that I would consider if he convinced me that that was something he was willing to do. So it kind of all depends on what he wanted. I wouldn't want Rudy Gay being upset every time he touched the floor and then hijacking my offense the whole time and becoming the Rudy Gay show when I have Russell Westbrook. I also think Rudy Gay is a terrible compliment stylistically for Russell Westbrook.
Oh, yeah. No, it doesn't fit at all. He likes to take a ton of mid-range shots. He likes to post up. He's couldn't be further from what the league is moving toward.
Right. He's not a floor spacer.
No.
He doesn't really move off the ball. He's not a good Russell Westbrook guy.
No.
If I have Russell Westbrook, my starters, I want guys to be good shooters who don't care if they touch the ball for all that long.
Mm-hmm.
And guys who can shoot and guys who can defend. That's who I want next to Russ. People talk about like Russ has to play this way. Russ wants to play this way. You kidding me?
Sure.
Like Russ wants to play this way. If Russ didn't want to play this way, guess what? He wouldn't play this way.
How much do you think CJ Miles would command? He's 29, great shooter, adequate defender.
I would be so happy if they signed CJ Miles. CJ Miles is like one of the best interviews in the NBA.
Be great. And he's a good fit. Like he is everything that you just described. Doesn't seem to care if he's not going to handle the ball. He's going to be a guy that's going to spot up and shoot.
Yeah. I think he's going to be too expensive though.
Yeah. He should be too expensive. I'll say that. He should be too expensive.
And unless he's actively willing to take less money for whatever reason to come to mm-hmm. Oklahoma City. I think his market at least will be too expensive. I have no idea what CJ Miles is thinking. I would be so happy, though. It would be like the only time where a journalist would come in on the recruiting pitch for a team. I would break every sort of like journalistic ethic. And I'd be like, no, you guys have got me. I'm helping you bring him in. Because he is such a good interview. I have a thing with like a couple other friends who cover the league. And it's like an all-star team for like unexpected role player guys who are amazing interviews.
Yeah.
And the name of the team is literally the CJ Miles All-Stars.
Bring him in.
He's great. He would be the new Amo, who is on the CJ Miles All-Stars.
He's just a great fit all around. He shot 50% from the corners this past season. He's 46%
the year before. The interviews. He's so smart. He's such a crazy smart guy. And he's like open and raw, and he's awesome. Anthony Morrow is on that team for sure, but CJ Miles, he's the namesake.
And he's a guy that the Thunder tried to get in restricted free agency way back when. So you know that Sam Presti likes him.
Yeah, that's a good call.
But it's been a long time.
He would be a nice fit.
Okay. Anything else? Anything else you think the Thunder will do this summer? Any bold predictions before you go?
Oh, any bold predictions? You know me. I'm always just spouting off as many hot takes as I can.
Or bold theories? You always got a theory.
I do like theories. I do usually have theories. I'm trying to think. My mind is, I'm kind of in off season mode right now, where my mind is kind of, I'm just generally dumber in the off season.
Hey, do you have any Enes Kanter theories?
Yes, Have you been following Enes Kanter's world tour, by the way, on Twitter?
A little bit, yes.
She's in a different country every day.
Yeah.
And he's doing, like, the most hilarious and cliche things in every country. It's like, hey, what are you going to do in the Philippines? And it's going to be Manny Pacquiao? And he's like, yep.
Of course I am. Sounds like it would be the most fun thing to do.
He was in South Korea, which he described, by the way. He didn't say he was going to South Korea. Do you know what he said?
He said he's going to the good one.
Yeah, he said I'm going to Korea, the good one.
Oh, he's so good.
He is so good.
I don't want him to leave, but I want him to leave.
He's so funny. I think I'm putting him at like a 55 to 60% probability that he sticks around.
Okay.
But at some point I might lower that to 51.
Mm-hmm.
Or like 50.01.
It's all dependent on the market, right? It's like all, that's what it's dependent on.
It always is, my friend.
Yeah.
It's always dependent on the market. Yeah. I mean, if they can get whatever they deem his price, if they can get even what less than what they deem his price for him, like a little bit less, I think they pull the trigger on that deal because they're going to be conscious of the luxury tax.
Mm-hmm.
They're really close to approaching that, and they'd like to re-sign Andre Roberson. And Enes is just, especially now that they're pretty open about thinking that Jeremy Grant is a four. And even Presti talked about in his exit interview about how Doug McDermott can play some more small ball four. Like, they are pretty open about guys playing the four. And if McDermott's going to play a little small ball four and Grant is mostly going to play the four and they like his defense, they like Sabonis as a piece moving forward, and they have Adams, and you know, those are bigs. Those are a mm-hmm. lot of bigs. And like we said, like they could potentially try to sign a stretch four. That could be a spot where they could try to get shooting, and that would obviously correspond with a Kanter move. But there are a lot of things that you know, there are a lot of pieces there with the bigs that just crowd up that position, and it's a lot of them are, you know, Kanter. I don't know how much Kanter's game fits with them. Like, moving forward, obviously it's always been an awkward fit, but like in 2018, it's going to be an even more awkward fit than it was in 2015. Like, watch these playoffs. Every single team response to something not going well is, okay, we're just going to go smaller.
Yeah. I mean, look, even San Antonio, who has
every single one. Yeah. Every single team, the response is, okay, you know, we'll just go smaller. And then it works. And it's going to become, and going small is not necessarily size. Like it's people think going small just means putting in a small guy. Like Jeremy Grant at the four isn't really defensively it's going small, but offensively it's not going small. Like mm-hmm. He hangs around the perimeter, but guys still don't really guard him on the perimeter. Thus the 94% of open 3-point shots.
Right.
But going small is based on a skill set. And maybe if Kanter starts really consistently shooting threes, which would obviously change his style a lot more, then that's at least offensively going small. It's not defensively going small because there's no versatility defensively and those lineups are going to get rocked. But like that's not I just don't really see that as a thing that they can do to where they can get Kanter a sufficient amount of minutes, especially during postseason series against really good teams, which are capable of going small. When they can just kind of play him off the floor like Houston did, like Golden State did the year before.
Mm-hmm. I have a trade idea before you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Hit me up. Let's hear it.
Kanter to the Kings for Anthony Tolliver and Willie Cauley-Stein.
Yeah. Kanter to the Kings is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are kind of built around a low post presence and they don't have a low post presence.
Yep.
And I could see Vivek like being in love with Kanter's. I could see like Vlade, like, really liking Kanter's low post game and his offense. Yeah. I mean, he is an unbelievable offensive player.
Oh, he's good. Like, he's a good. I mean, if this was 6 years ago, the Thunder wouldn't even dream of trading Enes Kanter. He's 24. He's a low post scorer. He can stretch out a little bit. I mean, he's great.
If this were 1992, Enes Kanter would be one of the biggest stars in the NBA. Seriously.
He'd be
starting at center for someone and he'd be getting 33 minutes a game. You'd probably be averaging like 21 and 11, and he'd be dominating the low post against everybody. Like, he would be one of the biggest stars in the league.
Yep.
There's no question. I don't think, like, if you average 20 and 10, you're a star in 1992.
Yep.
Nothing else mattered. If you were 20 and 10 in 1992, you were a star.
What do you think about my trade idea? Possible,
if not probable all-star. I think it's interesting. You want to bring in two more bigs?
I don't know, but I don't know who else on the Kings that you want to get.
Willie Cauley-Stein would be interesting. Man, like that bench lineup. A bench lineup would be quite athletic.
Yeah,
Willie Cauley-Stein at the 5 and Grant at the 4.
Yeah,
so much dunking.
And those guys can switch. Both of them can.
Right. Right. No, I see like the Tyson Chandler thing in Cauley-Stein.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't mean to say that he's going to be as good as Tyson Chandler. Right. Tyson Chandler's had a tremendously underrated career.
Oh, man. He's incredible. Should have been on the Thunder. Thanks a lot, Toe. I'll let you go, Fred. Thanks for coming on the show today. We can follow you on Twitter at Fred Katz. We can read your stuff with the Norm transcript. You were doing kind of player evaluations or player reviews on the Norman transcript and also on Locked on Thunder. So go read and listen to Fred and have a wonderful Monday.